KALW.
I wonder what folks are thinking on the first day of 2022.
On January 1st, a reporter called up the Bay Area's top COVID experts with a question.
They represent kind of a wide variety of opinions and thoughts about, you know, this pandemic. Did they wake up more optimistic than they did a year ago?
We'll hear what they said to the San Francisco Chronicle's Jill Tucker. Then we'll hear about an investigation into California's failure to protect outdoor workers from wildfire smoke.
When the agencies brag about, oh, we have the most stringent rules in the entire nation. Well, you can have rules, but if you don't enforce them, then there's nothing good out of them.
The latest from the series Dangerous Air. And Dr. Rupa Maria reads from her book, Inflamed. Stories from around the Bay, that's coming up. I'm Hanat Baba, and this is Cross Currents. It's a new year, the holidays are over, the kids are back in school, but a pandemic rages on. For 2 years now, we've relied on Bay Area experts on epidemiology and infectious disease to help us make sense of it all. From Stanford to UCSF to Berkeley, they guided us through COVID and its variants. And with Omicron and a new year, what are those experts saying now? Jill Tucker was curious about that. She usually reports on education for the San Francisco Chronicle, but on January 1st, she called up those experts with a question about COVID. Jill joined me to explain.
It really was sparked by a small tweet thread by Dr. Bob Wachter, who is kind of like the rock star guy of the Bay Area and of the country. He's the UCSF chair of the Department of Medicine, and he's just had this really down-to-earth take on COVID, really trying to help the public understand through Twitter. And he basically was just talking about what he thought Omicron would mean to the future. And that one big question was out there. And that is, you know, if there's immunity from Omicron, that we're really in good shape in looking at the end game. And I just thought, you know, that's really interesting. Like, you know, 2 years into it, I wonder what folks are thinking out there. How did they wake up today on the first day of 2022? And really, that's kind of what I asked these guys, I just kind of emailed all of the sort of experts that we all know from this pandemic. They all have a little bit of, you know, COVID-19 celebrity status.
Yes. You know, Dr. Wachter for sure, and Dr. Rutherford, all of these people you talk to.
And Monica Gandhi and Jean Noble. Yeah, and Dr. Siebel. And so you look at all these people, and I just thought they represent kind of a wide variety of opinions and thoughts about, you know, this pandemic in general. And I just thought, yeah, I'm going to ping them and see, you know, how they woke up this morning. Did they wake up more optimistic than they did a year ago? You know, do they feel more optimistic about 2022? Do they really believe that there's an end game that might be coming on the heels of Omicron? And so that's what I asked them.
So let's start with Dr. Wachter. Is he one of the people who voiced some hope and optimism, and why?
Yeah, Dr. Wachter, he tends to just be a very straight talker, you know, even though he's very much an expert in all of this. He's able to communicate that in really simplified terms and really try to help people understand what they should do based on what he's thinking about his own life, whether he's going to parties or not or whatever. And really what he's thinking of Omicron, and there's always the caveat of barring any surprises from this wily virus, that really we're looking at a lot of immunity once Omicron passes, because we have not only people who are vaccinated and boosted, but we're going to now have a lot of people who also have illness immunity from Omicron. And the only remaining question is how long that immunity might last. But he really sees in February and then into spring and summer that we're going to be looking really good, really good shape. And the question then is, if we do have long-term immunity from Omicron illness, those that weren't vaccinated or that get it as a breakthrough case, you know, we could be looking at the pandemic's end game. And so, you know, all of these folks, there's a lot of caveats. And to a person said, the next 4 to 6 weeks, give or take, are going to be truly awful. We're going to have a lot of illness in our community, a lot of cases, and fingers crossed, not a lot of hospitalizations and deaths, which is kind of what they're seeing across the world with Omicron. So that's the positive, but I think we're really going to see a lot of illness, as obviously we're already seeing.
Right. I feel like so many of us are just waiting to hear news that is hopeful, that is optimistic. Somebody else, Dr. John Swartzberg, is infectious disease specialist at UC Berkeley School of Public Health. You spoke to Dr. Swartzberg. He said in your article, quote, he's very optimistic about the late spring and summer.
Yeah, he did say before that that we're in for a really rough time in the short run. And he's, you know, specifically saying San Francisco, which is really the poster child for how to run a pandemic in terms of vaccination rates and all the mitigation factors. I mean, you know, this city is pretty good at masking. But he said, you know, case rates are already high in San Francisco and higher than in California. But we also have new pills that are becoming more widely available to treat it, so that even if high-risk people get it, they're not going to be hospitalized or die. And we're starting to see vaccinations get approved for even the younger kids and boosters for the adolescents. So when we were talking, I said, you know, it sounds like you sort of feel like the virus is surrounded, right? Like we've circled the wagons with treatments and vaccines and illness immunity. And, you know, Omicron is going to get a lot of people test positive, but ultimately we're going to have a lot of immunity plus all these other things. And, you know, we're in a much better place than we were a year ago, for sure, without question.
Now, one person I think who kind of diverged from the deluge of optimism is Dr. Robert Siegel, professor of infectious disease at Stanford, who said it's foolish to not expect additional variants. Tell us about what he was talking about.
Yes, I love Dr. Siegel. He's just hilarious. He's kind. And he was the Debbie Downer of the group, you know? Mm. He was the wah, wah, wah of all the folks that I talked to. But, you know, to be fair, he wants to be proven wrong. He hopes Dr. Wachter is right. He just thinks that this virus has fooled us before, that these variants have come and are not expected. Nobody anticipated Omicron like this. It just came out of the blue and just smacked the medical community and professionals, you know, to have a virus mutate like it did. You know, they're learning new things every day, but, you know, it's not as if they can predict everything. And they haven't been able to predict everything. And so in his mind, he's also a little concerned about portraying too much optimism with all of these things that we have in place now, because he also doesn't want people to get too optimistic so that they don't see something else coming.
And they let down their guard.
Exactly. And so he doesn't want them to let down their guard. He wants people to be braced for another variant, or what they call an unknown unknown. Like it's, you know, something that they don't even know. You know, they can't even predict it because they can't even conceive of it.
Uh-huh. The last person you talked to was Dr. Rutherford, George Rutherford. We have all had him on our shows. He's been very generous with his time. UCSF pediatrician and epidemiologist, where he was more optimistic this time last year than he is now.
Yeah, but he was more optimistic last year because he didn't know what was coming, if that makes sense. And we didn't have vaccines, you know, fully in effect. Only a handful of people had gotten them, you know, frontline workers at that point. Mm. And so he said he was more optimistic last year, but he feels, I think, a little wiser this year, mm-hmm. In terms of not taking anything for granted. And he's sort of been, you know, people like talking to folks like Dr. Siegel, you know, who don't want people predicting that things are going to be good and all of that. But because, you know, we've been fooled too many times by this virus. And he said, like everybody, it's going to get worse before it gets better. But he does feel like 100% 2022 will be better than 2021 because of the treatments and because of the vaccinations and because of even Omicron. And so he does feel like we're starting to get to the other side.
What a note to end on. Thank you, Jill.
Thank you.
Jill Tucker is a reporter with the San Francisco Chronicle. Her article is called Why Some Bay Area Medical Experts See a Coronavirus Endgame Within Months. We've got a link to it at klw.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Yesterday on the show, we explored how air pollution from shipyards and freeways has been harming Oakland residents. Today, we're going to hear about another danger in the air, wildfire smoke. A new investigation shows that California rarely enforces rules that are meant to protect outdoor workers from the dangers of wildfire smoke. It's the latest in a series called Dangerous Air from KQED and NPR's California Newsroom, a collaboration that boosts coverage on statewide issues. Here's reporter Farida Javala Romero.
Breathing wildfire smoke can lead to serious health problems like worsening asthma and heart failure. So when there's unhealthy levels of wildfire smoke, California employers are required to reduce exposure, such as by moving workers indoors or providing N95 masks. But in Fresno, the state's top producing agricultural county, many farm workers I spoke with say they've continued to work in heavy smoke with no protections. In a field by the highway, a man pulls dry grapevines from the soil. He's worked in U.S. agriculture for 15 years. I hand him a wrapped N95 mask and ask if his boss ever offered him one.
No, 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 no. En el trabajo no nos han dado ni máscaras para nada, en ningún trabajo.
No, at work they haven't given us masks at all, he says. We're not using his name because he says he fears retaliation from his employer. And like more than 40% of the state's ag workers, he's undocumented. An estimated 4 million people work outdoors in California. Over the last 2 years the rule's been in place, the state has faced the worst wildfire seasons on record. But the agency tasked with protecting workers' safety cited employers for violating the smoke rules just 11 times. That's according to data obtained by KQED and the California Newsroom. The official who was in charge of enforcement at Cal OSHA just got a bigger job as head of federal OSHA.
Testimony. Senators will each have 5 minutes for a round of questions. Before we begin.
During his Senate confirmation hearing this spring, Doug Parker told lawmakers a top priority is to enforce worker safety laws.
And then we also have to be able to deliver the goods once those workers have the trust in us to come forward.
He declined to speak with KQED and directed us to Dan Lucido, who's now the acting chief of Cal OSHA.
We are a leader in providing worker protection, including against smoke.
Do you really believe that there's only 11 violations of this law over 2 years?
So first of all, we can only respond to complaints that are issued. And in all of the cases where we responded and found evidence of a violation, we issued a citation.
Back in the field in Fresno, the worker says he didn't know about the rule, so he couldn't complain about not getting the required protections. His employer never told him how to stay safe on smoky days, he says. Other farm workers I talked to said the same thing. And that's something the rule says employers must also do in a language workers understand. Cantu Ag Management employs workers in this field.
So we already sent over your email to our attorney, so he is the one that's going to be responding.
Angie Garcia works at Cantu Ag Management. I contacted her after sending a request for comment.
We provide everything necessary for them to, you know, use while they're working.
Later, the attorney told KQED the company is in compliance with the smoke safety rules, but declined to provide any evidence. What's really needed, advocates and state lawmakers say, are strike teams of Cal OSHA inspectors in the fields on smoky days. But a bill to do just that was gutted in the state legislature earlier this year, after Governor Gavin Newsom's administration opposed it.
Now we're going to hear part two of this investigation by KQED's Farida Javala Romero. In this part, she looks more closely at the state's failure to enforce regulations that are meant to protect farm workers and other people exposed to wildfire smoke. Here's Farida again.
At a food bank in the town of Biola in Fresno County, volunteers help Alejandra Beltran load groceries into cardboard boxes and carry them to her pickup truck.
What does it need?
Beltran is a farm worker. This fall, she worked in the fields harvesting grapes for raisins, she says, including shifts in thick wildfire smoke.
Personally, me, it affects me on my, my chest. And I get very, a hoarse voice, and then it produces a lot of cough.
Tiny particles in wildfire smoke can trigger asthma attacks, strokes, and other serious health problems. Since 2019, California employers have been required to protect workers when smoke levels become unhealthy by offering them N95 masks, for example, or moving them indoors. But farm workers like Beltran told us they never heard about those regulations. She says she never got an N95, nor the training employers are supposed to give workers about the health hazards of smoke.
As far as my knowledge, we weren't told anything.
An estimated 4 million Californians work outdoors. But data obtained by KQED and the California Newsroom show that over the more than 2 years the smoke regulations have been in place, the state dispatched inspectors to only 26 employers. That led to just 11 citations for violations of the wildfire smoke standard.
11 violations, obviously is a very low number.
California Assemblyman Robert Rivas chairs the Assembly's Agriculture Committee. He introduced a bill that would have required the government to send strike teams of inspectors to the fields whenever smoke levels become dangerous.
Having a mechanism of enforcement is incredibly important.
But the provision was deleted last summer after opposition from Governor Gavin Newsom's administration. That's according to internal documents we viewed and interviews with people close to the negotiations.
My effort here was not trying to penalize growers in any way and, or the agricultural industry, but it was to, achieve a level of accountability.
Governor Newsom's press office did not respond to multiple requests for comment. And neither did his Labor and Workforce Development Agency, which documents show wanted the strike teams removed. Dan Lucido did talk to us. As acting chief of Cal OSHA, she's in charge of enforcing the smoke rules. She also didn't want to comment on the changes to the bill.
To the extent that any amendments were made, it would have been the author's decision to amend the bill, not ours.
Lucido says her agency is a leader in providing worker protections, including against wildfire smoke. She says Cal OSHA is not opposed to sending strike teams out on smoky days. She acknowledged they've been short on outreach and blamed the pandemic. But now she says the agency is trying to get the word out about the smoke regulations, like through this video in English and Spanish posted on their website.
In California, el humo de los incendios puede afectar a los lugares de trabajo que se encuentran.
But many farm workers say they still don't know about the protections. So the rule's not working, says Nayamin Martinez. She directs the Central California Environmental Justice Network.
I always find it very ironic when the agencies brag about, we have the most stringent rules in the entire nation. Well, you can have rules, but if you don't enforce them, then there's nothing good out of them.
Martinez's organization surveyed more than 300 farm workers in San Joaquin Valley earlier this year. Nearly 60% reported that their employers did not provide N95 masks or that they did not know what N95s were. In Fresno, I'm Farida Javala Romero.
That was the latest in the series called Dangerous Air, a two-part investigation produced by KQED in collaboration with NPR's California Newsroom. The California Newsroom is a partnership to boost coverage of statewide issues. This is Cross Currents. I'm Henat Baba. Now, we're going to hear a doctor read from her new book in another episode from KALW's literary podcast, New Arrivals.
This is New Arrivals, a pocket-sized book tour with Bay Area authors. I'm Lisa Morehouse. This is how Rupa Maria describes herself.
I'm a doctor and a mom and a musician. I live in the occupied territory of Huchin, what's now called Oakland, and I work at UCSF in Ramatush Ohlone territory.
She co-wrote the book Inflamed, Deep Medicine and the Anatomy of Injustice with Raj Patel. It came out in August.
A system approaching a steady state or a type of homeostasis is a highly interconnected network in which positive and negative feedback balance and benefit the whole structure. Such a system is stable and resilient to disturbance when the distribution of energy and resources is even and when care of the whole network is prioritized. Colonial capitalism suppresses the equitable distribution of resources, expending great energy through extraction, border construction, incarceration, and the creation of supremacist cosmologies and institutions, to maintain a structure that prioritizes individuals over communities. Without the networking capacity benefit of communities, society under colonial capitalism is more vulnerable to the shocks and failures of systems within systems, which we see with pandemics, raging wildfires, and stock market volatility. At this historic moment, when the web of life is in unprecedented peril, engagement with systems thinking is critical.
That was Rupa Maria reading from Inflamed.
New Arrivals is produced by Lisa Morehouse, and there's more at kalw.org/newarrivals. Tune into Cross Currents tomorrow at 5. We'll meet two men as they work to reconcile their identities as Latinx and Muslim.
Do I ever get an invite, you know, to someone's house during Ramadan? No, because I'm going to be a different culture, a different background, and might be a little different.
The pressure to erase a part of who you are, tomorrow at 5 on Cross Currents from KALW News. Today's local music is the Bay Area duo Migrant Pickers. They'll be playing tonight at the No Name Bar in Sausalito.
When I'm dead, my dearest, sing no sad songs for me. Plant no roses at my head, no shady cypress tree.
Today's Cross Currents team includes DeAndre Ball, Ryan Housel, James Rollins, Gabe Graben, Victor Tense, Shirin Adel, Sunni Khalid, and Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.
I shall not see the shadows.